Okay, today it's going to be a little bit different than I normally do. And I think woke up this morning and said, okay, now what is it that you ought to have me in mind to say? Because I had something in mind. And so I went to the area and I decided I'm going to do something different today. I need a reader. And I would like the reader to read out of the King James Version, or the New King James Version. If you're a reader, you don't have one, maybe someone can loan you their book. Now, the reason is because I'm an old man, and I understand 1611 English better than I understand modern English in a lot of ways. So, Matt, we're going to go to the book of Luke. And the event is where Yeshua is at Pontius Pilate location. And so I want the entire chapter read. Chapter 23 of the book of Luke.
Then the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king." Then Pilate asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered him and said, "It is as you say." So Pilate said to the chief priests and to the crowd, "I find no fault in this man." But they were the more fierce, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place." When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked of the man if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at the time. Now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him, and he hoped to see some miracle done by him. Then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. Then Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. That very day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with each other. Then Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, said to them, "You have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things of which you accused him. No, neither did Herod, for I sent you back to him, and indeed nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him, for it was necessary for him to release one to them at the feast." And they all cried out at once, saying, "Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas, who had been thrown into prison for a certain rebellion made in the city and for murder. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, again called out to them. But they shouted, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Then he said to them the third time, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found no reason for death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go." But they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and of the chief priests prevailed. So Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they requested, and released to them the one they requested, who for rebellion and murder had been thrown into prison, but he delivered Jesus to their will. Now as they led him away, they laid hold of a certain man, Simon a Cyrenian, who was coming from the country, and on him they laid the cross that he might bear it after Jesus. And a great multitude of the people followed him, and women who also mourned and lamented him. But Jesus, turning to them, said, Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For indeed the days are coming in which they will say, Blessed are the barren wombs that never bore and breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things in the green wood, what will be done in the dry? There were also two other criminals led with him to be put to death. And then they came to the place called Calvary, where they crucified him, and the criminals, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Then Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. And they divided their garments and cast lots. And the people stood looking on, but even the rulers with them sneered, saying, He saved others, let him save himself, if he is the Christ, the chosen of God. The soldiers also mocked him, coming and offering him sour wine, and saying, If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. And an inscription also was written over him in letters of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. This is the king of the Jews. Then one of the criminals who were hanged blasphemed him, saying, If you are the Christ, save yourself and us. But the other, answering, rebuked him, saying, Do you not fear God, seeing you are under the same condemnation? And we indeed justify, for we receive the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said to Jesus, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said to him, Assuredly I say to you today, you will be with me in paradise. Now it was about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. Then the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And then Jesus had cried out with a loud voice. He said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Having said this, he breathed his last. So when the centurion saw what had happened, he glorified God, saying, Certainly this was a righteous man. And the whole crowd who came together to the sight, seeing what had been done, beat their breasts and returned. But all his acquaintances and the women who followed him from Galilee stood at a distance watching these things. Now behold, there was a man named Joseph, a council member, a good and just man. He had not consented to their decision. Indeed, he was from Arimathea, a city of the Jews, who himself was also waiting for the kingdom of God. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then he took it down, wrapped it in linen, and laid it in a tomb that was hewn out of the rock, where no one had ever lain before. That day was a preparation, and the Sabbath drew near. And the woman who had come to him from Galilee followed after, and they observed the tomb, and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment.
Thank you. We'll have you read another section later on. My first question to you is, what is your impression? We have in our world, as individual people, we may, quote, challenge one another's thinking of what time it was. When did it happen? Was it this day, that day, last month, this week? I'm not interested in what anybody thinks of the timing. I'm only interested in asking the question, what do you think of the event? What do you think took place and why, if you can? If you don't, I want your input. Because see, to my mind, this is the bravest human being that ever walked the face of the earth. And before I make my comment, any comments from anybody? We'll go right here.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're looking for, Richard, but I'm always moved by several things in this chapter. I'll only mention maybe a couple here. And that is the chief priests. I'm reading the new RSV, actually, so it's a slightly different take, but essentially the same as what Damon read. The chief priests and the scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him. Vehemently accusing him. These are the people that should be the defenders of the law, and they had nothing in the law that they could hold against them. They had to get false accusers to nail this man. And it's really, really pathetic.
What did Pilate say about those accusations?
I find nothing in the man.
He found them no grounds. And we'll get into the other chapter that I want you to read later on. Is there any other comments?
He stood before all the people of authority, and yet he was the author of authority.
Who?
I mean, Jesus.
Oh, okay.
He was before governors and the chief priests and Pilate and Herod, and it was a court. It was court.
But he was standing before a bunch of typical ordinary Jews, right? He's standing in front of those who are members of the Sanhedrin and members of the high priesthood and of the governor and of Herod, who was the governor of Galilee.
He could have, at that point in time, explained the whole situation, told him exactly all of the prophecies and everything, and stopped the issue. But instead, he focused on his job and he did it.
Because why?
Because somebody had to say,
"Thy will be done. Thy will be done. Thy will be done." And we will read later on, "I said nothing unless he told me to say this." The Messiah kept back tremendous amount of information. But not because for himself. He did it because of the people. Okay? So we're looking at this particular human being, and we kind of, you know, okay, let me ask you a question. In your Christian world, this, and I just want to say this to you, okay? In your Christian world, you kind of look at the Messiah, Jesus, Yeshua, as the one who delivered you out of sin and transgression and the death, right? And as a Christian, we have a tendency to look upon him as a personal thing, right? Next thing we have to ask is, okay, are you glad that Jesus died? Okay, that's a hard one, isn't it? But at the very same time, since you and I would look back in our life and are thankful that he died for our sins and our transgressions, that transgression, the Bible is very clear about this, that's what we're supposed to think about. In this chapter, what did Jesus think about? In this chapter, what did Yeshua think?
Fulfilling the will of the Father.
What did he say to the women who were crying? What did he say to the women who were crying? Weep for yourself. Don't cry about me. Weep for yourself. So in his dying day, he was not thinking of himself at all, was he? He was thinking about the people. And he says, weep for yourself. The day will come. What day is going to come? The mountains You'll scream out and have the mountains to cover you because the great wrath of God is going to come. You didn't pick that up, did you? But see, the book of Revelation says that, right? Both the very important ones down to the guy in jail wants to be hidden from the wrath of God. Right? What does Pesach mean? A covering. From what? Protection. From what?
Death.
From the wrath of God. Not the wrath of the devil, but the wrath of God. And so he says something to them. Weep for yourself, O daughters, because it's going to get really, really bad. Well, that's a prophecy, isn't it? So I'm looking at this thing and I'm saying, wow, here we have a human being who kept silent. He was told by his Almighty Father, I'm paraphrasing this, my son, when they ask you a question, say nothing. Keep your mouth shut. Put it in our terminology. Don't look out for yourself. If you could speak for yourself and defend yourself, you'd be free. No one would kill you. However, keep your mouth shut. And he did it willingly for people. A brave, brave human being. Wouldn't you think so? Now, with that being said, we'll go to another chapter here in a minute. How does that relate to us today? Because he was killed representing what animal? Was called the Passover. How does that relate to it? How does it relate to you? How does it relate to your life? Why is it so important that there's all four Gospels, basically three of them, real big, center in on this incident? And it's like, what Christian world, I'm sorry if you were there, but, you know, Christian world celebrates the resurrection. And he says, look out. Because when I come back, you're wanting to have a Pesach. There's a question that was asked me today. When the Messiah returns, will he set up Passover? And I said, oh yeah. That's the only way people are going to see and understand what it's all about. And once they get the picture, once they realize that that animal, totally innocent, was killed to protect you, not from the devil, but from the Creator of heaven and earth. I find that when we keep this Passover, as I said before, I want to concentrate on honoring the Father and honoring His Son. And the courage that I see, and just read this chapter, not much commentary I'm going to say today, but I just wanted to really understand that this is our Passover. And what he went through, we can picture all this. I'm sorry, I don't like televisions and I don't like movies about Christ. I like what is written. I believe what is written more than I see from what Hollywood can produce. They don't produce things worthwhile looking at for me, personally. So, this coming Passover, this coming Monday night, I'm going to read something out of the New Testament. It's going to be now it's over with. Let's look at what else he had said when he was alive. And so be prepared for this Passover. We're going to read something from within. I'm going to find out what he said, because I think it's very important. I've told you this before. I am more interested in what he said and what he did than I am interested in the details. The details are important. Don't get me wrong. But we could argue or quarrel or bicker and have our opinion about this and about that. What took place? A man, a brave man, courageous man, did something that no human being ever thought about doing. Taking his life for the sake of others. Because his father had only one option left. And his option was, well, you either die for them, or I'm going to wipe them out. I can't take it anymore. I put a paraphrase in that. But it's not in the story. My son, last week, I mentioned something about, which I think is very fascinating. This is just a way to think about things. And last week I asked the question, why was it important that a friend of Yeshua had to betray him? Why was it important? Why couldn't it be an acquaintance? Why couldn't it be a priesthood? Why couldn't it be somebody else? Why that? We'll get into the next section in a minute. What, put in perspective now, what created being in all of the Bible from Genesis to book end of the book of Revelations is spoken of in very abundant and glorious terms? Lucifer. Lucifer is spoken of more highly than anybody else. And Lucifer betrayed his creator. So we're seeing a picture. And we're seeing in the physical flesh that somebody in the flesh had to betray his son. So we would see the picture that God's real enemy is who he is. And see that and understand why God didn't create Lucifer to do evil. He chose to betray him. He was the cherub that covered what? The throne. The most glorious one of the bunch. And he said that he was very wise, full of wisdom, more than any other spirit being that he created, that he is quoted as saying. And so we see the picture here. And what did that betrayal lead to? Here we have Genesis, first chapter. What took place? And then, you know, great picture. And he says everything he's created on the earth was beautiful, gorgeous, and perfect. Then comes the second chapter about this garden, right? You remember that story? A gorgeous garden, right? Beautiful garden. And Adam's job was to take care of the garden, and he was to name all the animals in the field. Not name all the animals that are in the garden. Because the garden didn't have animals in the field. They were outside of the garden. And so he went outside, and he did what God wanted to do, named the animals of the field. And one of those animals more clever, smarter. We know the story. And that animal, or that creature that represented the devil, betrayed Did he betray Adam? Did he betray Eve? Or did he betray God again? Trying to destroy everything that He, the Father, creator of heaven and earth, has put together on this earth. When you come to think about this in this Passover time, the Passover is the beginning of the cleaning up and deliverance and protecting of the people. Because God has to destroy that being and His world. And that's where the book of Revelation comes to an end. And we see the conclusion of the pact. I want you now, please, I want you to read John chapter 19. Back again, like we're almost at the paralleling of, but John had a different approach. One thing I like about Matthew and Luke and John is that they give you all sorts of inside information. Luke was a very close friend of Peter, so we got how Peter was there telling Luke what took place. And John was there too. Matthew? Not necessarily. Doesn't say that. But Matthew has come to a point. Chapter 19.
So then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put him a purple robe. Then they said, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they struck him with their hands. Pilate then went out again and said to them, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him." Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." Therefore, when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify him, crucify him." And Pilate said to them, "You take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God." Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid, and went again into the praetorium, got a double thing there, and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Then Pilate said to him, "You are not speaking to me. Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you?" Jesus answered, "You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat him in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbaiath. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover, in about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." But they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Then he delivered him to them to be crucified, so they took Jesus and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went out to a place called the Place of the Skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him and two others with him, one on either side and Jesus in the center. Now Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Then many of the Jews read this title, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. Therefore the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, "Do not write 'the King of the Jews,'" but he said, "I am the King of the Jews." Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Jesus, took his garments and made four parts, to each soldier a part, and also the tunic. Now the tunic was without seam, woven from the top in one piece. They said therefore among themselves, let us not tear it, but cast lots for it, those whose it shall be, that the scripture might be fulfilled, which says, they divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Therefore the soldiers did these things. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, woman, behold your son. Then he said to the disciple, behold your mother. And from that hour, that disciple took her to his own home. After this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, said, I thirst. Now a vessel full of sour wine was sitting there, and they filled a sponge with sour wine, put it in a hyssop, and put it in his mouth. So when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, it is finished. And bowing his head, he gave up his spirit. Therefore, because it was the preparation day that the bodies should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. Then the soldiers came and broke the legs of the first and of the other who was crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus and saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and immediately blood and water came out. And he who has seen has testified, and his testimony is true, and he knows that he is telling the truth, so that you may believe. For these things were done that the scripture should be fulfilled, not one of his bones shall be broken. And again another scripture says, they shall look on him whom they pierced. After this, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly, for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him permission. So he came and took the body of Jesus. And Nicodemus, who at first came to Jesus by night, also came, bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pounds. Then they took the body of Jesus and bound it in stripes of linen with the spices, as the custom of the Jews is to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified there was a garden, and in the garden a new tomb in which no one had been laid. So there they laid Jesus, because of the Jews, preparation day for the tomb was nearby. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene...
Just that chapter. Sorry. The other controversial issue, which I don't want to talk into today. Now, in the book of John, what do you see? What stands out?
I like the supporting scriptures that are given here, Richard, right out of the Tanakh, that authenticate Yeshua as being the Messiah.
Right. What's good to do that? See, the one thing that Jeff does, he's doing this now, he's going to go through the stuff, but not right away. When he gets here, he's going to go back and go back and go back. Jeff does good to pick it up where it's written. I'm not really out there to pick it up to where it's written. That's his job down there at the other end of the room. My job is to say what was going on. What took place.
In the other chapter we read, we saw Jesus being silent. This time he spoke up and he said, you would have no power if it weren't given you from above. And I thought of Daniel's chiastic structure. And I thought that was the one time he spoke and the importance of what he said there.
Now, when Jesus said that, or Yahshua was saying that, did he do it in his defense? No. Now, this is an interesting thing in part of this chapter. Now, it says, therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. Who's the one that delivered him? Sorry, what? Wait a minute now. Was it Pontius Pilate that delivered him? No. Was it the high priest that delivered him? No. Was it the Sanhedrin that delivered him? Well, we could name all sorts of people, but he was naming an individual or an individual being. When we, in the book, during the Passover season, during the Day of the Living Bread, there's a certain very important section there in the book of John, and he states three very important things. We won't go there today because it's not my object today. My object is to pay attention to who is being and who and what, who's received the greater sin. Now we look at Pontius Pilate, right? What was Pontius Pilate's sin? Found no guilt for him. Was that sin? Okay, what did Pontius Pilate sin? What was his sin? He didn't condemn anybody. He let the will of the people take over.
Delusion.
Right. He let the will of the people take over. Remember he was afraid of the previous chapter, about when he found out that this was, he called himself the Son of God. What do you think went through Pilate's brain? Oh, you mean the Son of the Creator of heaven and earth? Or Son of a God who was very powerful? Not knowing who it is, because in the Roman philosophy, Greek philosophy, and world philosophy, all right, around the world at that time, long before that time, any country was controlled by a Elohim, a spiritual being who has complete power and control over that nation. And you say, well, that's kind of funny, isn't it? But then you take a look at Greece, and there was an empire or emperor over the Greeks. A spiritual empire. Book of Daniel tells you this very clear. Because, see, we are not fighting. What did the Apostle Paul say? We're not fighting against. So is Jesus fighting against flesh and blood here? Was Jesus telling, by the way, no, you don't have this power, okay, to do what you want to do? Why can't he? Was he, if he was fighting against Pilate, he would have won. But he wasn't fighting against Pilate. He's fighting against the enemy of his father, who became an adversary, whose name was once the light bringer, the one that brings the truth, the one that brings forth light unto the world. Remember, that's what Lucifer means? The light bringer. Now, we have Yahshua as the one who is the light bringer now, right? And so we light a menorah, we don't kind of say he's the light of the world, he's the light of... Well, yes, but was he prior to that? No. He became the light of the world afterwards. Remember what he said to his disciples? All power now is in my hand. You mean it wasn't in your hand before? No. All authority is in my power. You didn't have before? No. All principalities are my authority. Did he have them before? No. Now he has them. And you think he's really fighting against flesh and blood? No, he's fighting against the worst enemy there is. The book of Revelation, at the very end of it, tells you who he's going to eliminate. All right? So we look here. We say in this Passover time, this individual did not defend himself for any reason, for any cause at all. He really did it. And he could have bowed out. And he prayed three times. And the Father says, no, no, no. Or my thinking is the Father didn't answer him. Because there's a statement he said, which is the book of Matthew. I'm not going to go there today because I'm out of time. But he says, why have you forsaken me? He wasn't listening. So the Father himself, in his own ability, in a sense, spiritually speaking, had to turn his face away from his most beloved Son. Talk about being alone. Talk about being, and sometimes we in our individual feel like, oh, I'm so alone. I need somebody. I need somebody to give me a hug. I want somebody to kiss me. I want somebody to... Oh, what's happening? You know, here this man didn't think of himself, bawl himself, but he said he was in great stress. Oh, what does that mean? Great drops of blood came down from him. And we need to, in my personal opinion, when we come to this Passover and we go through our living Haggadah thing, as my wife calls it, I want you to keep in mind who the Passover really is. Yeah, we're going to symbolically put bad tasting wine on the doorpost. You don't want to drink this stuff, it's horrible. Anyway, we're going to put that on the doorpost, and you can say, okay, but once you enter in, you are free from being destroyed. We don't really kind of look at that, but yet in one way, it's the Passover, and Jesus' blood was not put upon the doorpost. Where was Jesus' blood put? In the ground. Spilled upon the ground. There's all sorts of theories of where it went. I'm not going to go there. That's another thought, another world, and I'll let all the speculators and all the interpreters interpret any which way they want. And they may be right. I know, I'm just Richard. I'm a real simple guy. Okay, water, blood, down. Okay, that's where I went. And you can interpret any way you want. That's okay. I don't care. My interest is only in this. I find this individual named Jesus, or Yahshua, and he says, you don't have the power. What? I'm governor. What do I mean? I can say you could live or you could die. What was Pontius Pilate's response? Fear struck him. What kind of fear struck him? The next sentence tells you. What does it tell you? Very funny statement. If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. There, whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. Caesar? Pontius Pilate was more terrified of Caesar than he was of anybody else. How many times did he present to the priesthood, the Sanhedrin, and the other, the later leaders, how many times did he present to the Yeshua to them and say, I find no fault in him? Three times. Three times. That's an interesting number, isn't it? Three times. And when we come to the Passover night, there's going to be a big, huge banner up there, which some of you have seen. And I'm going to mention a little bit about it, not a whole lot about it, just a very fascinating process of what it shows you in what is written in the book. Okay. So today I'm going to do something entirely different. I want us to center in on not whether or not, quote, we are worthy or not worthy. Center in on, look at the Messiah. He made us worthy by his own life. And we are responding to him. We are hearing him Do we stumble and fall? Yeah. As we get older within the Messiah, we're supposed to not stumble very often. And that's where growing in grace and knowledge is all about. We should not be falling down anymore. We should be standing and walking within the Word. Within the Word. And we'll talk about that on Passover night. I have nothing more to say. Peter?
Could you, maybe I misunderstood you. Did you say that the light, that Jesus became the light after he became
right.
flesh?
That's why John wrote what he wrote.
You mean that...
He would not call the light until after the resurrection.
But how do you explain John's obvious reference to Genesis 1 and saying...
He's writing
the
after
word
the event, not before. He's not writing it now and says, oh, by the way, I'm trying to figure this thing out. He didn't write the story before Jesus died. He wrote the story after Jesus died. And he didn't. There's nothing in the scripture says he's going to be the light until he's dead. Somebody else had to take over the job of Lucifer.
So the light of the world wasn't the light from the beginning. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
Who was the light from the beginning? It says Lucifer was. What? And Lucifer was supposed to do what? Bring the light. Bring the word. The word of what?
Let there be light.
Of the Father's will. Period. Point blank. That was his job. And he didn't do it. He turned against him. Yes.
So what you're saying Lucifer's job was...
He was created for that reason.
Where do you get that information
about
Ezekiel?
Lucifer? Ezekiel? And see, we look at Lucifer as going, but we don't look at him what God said about him. You were perfect. You were the light. You were the one to bring forth the light. And we associate the light with, quote, the sun. That really gives us light to the world. Physically. Yes.
Think of it this way. When Yeshua was being tempted by the devil, remember the temptations that he brought to Jesus? He had the power to fulfill every single one of them. If Yeshua had succumbed to any of them, Lucifer, the devil, had the power to give that to him. Lucifer was not offering Jesus something he didn't have. He offered him things he had. But after Yeshua's death and resurrection, he no longer had that power and that authority.
In the book of John, he talks about three things that are very, very important. They had not yet arrived until Lucifer entered into Judas Iscariot and he was betrayed. It was very, very important to know that. Three very important things that he said. And he has said them in a specific order. We have to look and see and what God had in mind. We sometimes think of, before the world began. Yes, that's true. I have no doubt about it. But why is Lucifer involved, quote, with salvation, in a quote? If it wasn't for him, would man have ever had sinned? His job was to do something. Now, why did God create human beings? You forgot? To create them like Lucifer? To create them like himself. Now, biblically, we talk about the word light. It's one that's going to show you and teach you and lead you to a specific place. And that specific place was the throne of the living God, which Lucifer hovered over before sin was found within him. That's his job. We don't think of it that way. Because, see, we don't like to talk about Lucifer. That had any influence whatsoever in our lives. But he has influenced every human being's life from the very beginning, including Adam and Eve and all her children and all their children. We have a more of a belief system in the world, and we have to in our own Christian world, get out of the belief system of how things are put together and look higher, look beyond that. This is my input. Now, you don't have to agree with me. Don't have to agree with me at all. I'm just telling you there's some story that has to be seen and understood. And I think it's greater. Why Passover is so important in the beginning. And we see everything, a lot of major events taking place in the talk. Passover time, Passover time, Passover time, Passover time. Not very many of them about the Feast of Tabernacles. More about Passover time. And the book of Revelations, excuse me if I may get wrong, I think it's the 11th chapter, but it says, there was the Lamb, standing on Mount Zion. Lamb?
I thought he was going to be a lion!
Lamb? 144,000 with him. Oh, Lamb? You mean he's going to introduce Passover again? Daniel.
Yes, please. What do you say about the verse, let there be light? The very first word spoken in the scriptures.
What do you think it means?
It sounds like you mean...
Let truth come out. Light always refers to truth. Let truth come forth. And what did truth do? And darkness disappeared.
It couldn't comprehend it.
Couldn't tolerate it. It just couldn't accept it. And
so you're saying that darkness couldn't comprehend Lucifer?
Did God comprehend Lucifer?
So you're saying let there be light was let there be Lucifer. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
You've got to understand the second verse in the book of Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. You've got to understand that verse before we continue on, before you find out what happened the first day, second day, third day. If you don't understand the second verse,
I understand.
Then it means anything.
I understand we see God, we see the Spirit, and we see the light, which is Jesus Christ in the first verses of the Bible.
Right, that's fine. That's great. Not the very first verse.
God
first
is
verse is made up of... First God verse is made up of... First verse is made up of five Hebrew words.
So
seven Hebrew words. The first verse is made up of seven perfect Hebrew words.
Yep.
What is it?
Baruch.
Bereshit, para, Elohim, et hashamayim, va et haaretz.
In the earth.
Perfection.
So let there be light was about Jesus Christ.
That was down in the after verse 2. You've got to read verse 2. Because Hoshea took over the earth. Hoshea dominated the earth. Wait a minute. You mean he did, but in the book of Isaiah, it says, I did not create this world in Hoshea. I did not create this world in Tohu Vavohu. I did not create it that way. Wait a minute. Second verse says you did. No, he says, I didn't. Either he's lying in chapter 2, verse 2, or he's lying in Exodus. I mean, Isaiah.
Let there be light. Let there be light.
That's not the second verse.
But
That's not the second verse.
I'm not done with the first verse yet.
First verse is just heaven and earth.
Well, I mean, I'm not done with the first words, which is Christ is the Word, which is our life.
I'm not arguing with that one. I'm not arguing with that at all.
Okay.
Well, when we come and you read, I don't know if you're going to come here, Pastor, or not, but there's something I'm going to feedback on people to look at it and say, oh, now I've got it. Now I understand what he was saying. Hindsight is going to help us.
I think what you're misunderstanding is that Lucifer was the light bringer. He was not the light. He was the light bringer. He was the bright and morning star. He was not the light. No, God is the light. Yeah, so...
Well, I had to find out who really the light is. Book of John, John 2nd chapter. It says that the Father is a Father of...
Light.
Lights. Oh, you mean He is the light? Or is Jesus the light? Is the Father the light? Or is Jesus the light? The book of Revelation said that what comes down is New Jerusalem. Oh, there's one light and there's the other one. One is dominant and the other one is not. In the book of Genesis. Okay. I'm getting off on a... I'm sorry. My thought today is not on this subject matter. I don't want to go there. I just want you to know that when you come to the Passover, think what took place here in John 23 and in Matthew 27, which we read today, and Luke 23. We got to quiz.
Not that this means a whole lot, but to me, I've always found it interesting, those of you who have paid attention and spotted this, that throughout the entire Tanakh, you notice a pattern of God. The one He chooses to continue on the process is never the first choice. He always chooses the second one.
Always.
Or the one that's the unlikely choice. And you ask yourself, well, why would God do that? If the Torah, which talks actually a lot about firstborns and how important they are, how come He never chooses them? What's wrong with firstborns? What's wrong with first picks? And even He points out to Samuel, because the first time you picked with your eyes. You picked with what you saw. You didn't pick with what was actually inside them. And when you look at the description of Lucifer and what he looks like, he's very attractive. Look at the description of what the Messiah looks like. He's a busted up lamb with hideous looking eyes. He's unattractive. But see, when push came to shove, who stepped up the plate when it came to Adam and Eve? The lamb did to die.
The lamb did.
Lucifer didn't. The snake didn't come. Oh, I'm so sorry, God, please kill me in their place. The lamb had to do it. And so when you come to the Old Testament, so the New Testament comes along, well, yeah, Lucifer, you did something you weren't supposed to do. You didn't even step up like you should have when you obviously did something that was evil.
And you know,
but the lamb said, yeah, you're right, God. Lucifer should have stepped up. He didn't. The people are deserved to die. But I want you to kill me instead. I'm the unattractive one. I'm the least likely one, the one you should not have been chosen. But I am actually what I use the term, the, quote, true light, referred to in John,
right,
as opposed to the fake one. That one implies if there's a true light, that means there's not a true light, a fake light. And to me, all that seems, since God's very big on the idea of betrayal, because it comes over and over and over again, and how really important, as Jeff pointed out last week, that Messiah kept asking Peter, do you actually love me? Trying to get to him, what is actually in you? Can I trust you after I'm dead that you won't betray me later? To try to get to the heart of who Peter actually was. And since that's so important, what actually was inside was the core of what God was after, was the base of the light versus what actually looked like on the outside, like Lucifer was designed from the outside, not the inside.
Right.
To me, it kind of makes sense. It's that, all right, God is giving us an example of when you choose what looks right is usually, actually in every case we've seen, wrong. It's what is inside that actually matters. And we get this example of the entire Tanakh over and over again, as well as the New Testament, that it's the true light of the base of the selection should never be what you first perceive as true, what you first perceive as good, as God examined and showed us through the Adam and Eve. What is matters is what's actually inside and going beyond that. What actually steps up to the plate and does what it's supposed to do as it was designed. So
right.
To say the light, yeah, Messiah was the true light. Was he the original light? I would have to say no. Lucifer was the original light because he was supposed to be made better than the Messiah. But Messiah actually became a true light versus Lucifer became the false light. But they're both light. One just fell flat on his face and one just gave his life for it.
And when Jesus was to be tempted, and it says in Hebrews, he's tempted at all manners. Sometimes we say, Yes.
Oh, just building on what Daniel was saying there, because one of the things that is often brought up is the fact that the stuff of the Bible and Christianity is nothing but a copy of like Zoroastrianism, and there are the ideas of Taoism with the yin and the yang. You got to have the blend of the white and the dark, the good, the evil, and they're both balancing powers. You have to have both of them. And so the one thing is that God is not at the mercy of or responding to. He is choosing this. Like, what's the lesson of the second born or the last born? He's choosing to do it this way. And the point is that we should always ask is, why is he doing that? And the life of the Messiah shows us the why. The mercy of what he's doing.
God does say, I want you to challenge me. I want you to understand me. You've got to ask me some tough questions. I have the answers. But if you're not interested in what I think, or what my will is, what my desire is, then go off and play hockey. We won't talk. Or whatever game you like to do. Go off and, jump off a bridge. And that's it's your will. I don't care. If you don't care about what I think, and you don't come up and ask me some tough questions, was Jesus ever ask really tough questions? A lot. Did Moses ever ask tough questions? A lot. Did the prophets ask a lot of tough questions? A lot. Now, should we say, well, we shouldn't ask God any questions? And he says, well, if you don't want to know me, that's fine. I won't get to know you either. Your will will stay away from me, and I'll stay away from you. Ellie, this is going a lot longer than I planned.
I just want to ask, I think I understand what you're saying, but in 2 Corinthians 11:14, it says, and no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into angel of light. So he still wants to be the light guy. He knows how to do it. He is just not willing to do what the light guy had to do.
What the light guy had to do.
To bring real light, right?
Which was the creator of heaven and earth. The Father. Messiah. The Father created him in the first place.
But Messiah had to do the job.
Right. And the job is not, he did say, what we just read here, the job is finished. He's done
Satan
his job.
Still wants to say, but I like light, I'm prettier.
Well, he says it is finished. I've come and done your work. We'll read that again tomorrow night, on Passover night, where he made that statement. Yes.
Do you believe that Jesus was God?
Yes. I have no problem with that one.
And that he was with God in the beginning.
I have no problem with that one.
In the beginning.
Right.
Then it seems like the things that I've been hearing are contrary.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me at all.
Before God is what you're
saying. No, Lucifer was a created being.
Created being.
Period.
So then the word that is God and light, the life of man, was from the beginning before any other thing was created.
No, I have no argument that the Father himself is the light.
And light, yes.
He is the light.
Therefore, Jesus also is the light.
Correct. But we have to listen to a little bit what he said to understand when that took place.
From the beginning, before anything was made, obviously.
What was the job of Lucifer?
To bear witness, to be a messenger, like an angel is supposed to be, a messenger.
What's he supposed to bring?
Not the true light.
What's he supposed to bring?
The message he's supposed to bring.
What was the message of?
Testimony of the light.
Light!
Peter, this might be an interesting thing. What Richard's trying to get across, a modern example of this, is the difference between light and a fiber optic cable. The fiber optic cable transmits the light, but it is not the light. It has no light in it.
Is it a channel or a channel? I hate that word. It's a method by which it goes through. Now Jesus becomes the method which we see the light.
Good. So Lucifer is never
now
was
we
the
see
light.
The light by and through Good. What Jesus has done.
It sounded like your words were different.
Prior to that, you didn't see the light.
Did anybody understand what I was hearing him say? Yeah.
Lucifer prior to Jesus, you didn't see the light. Man Good. Did not see the light until Jesus came on the scene and died. When he died, man saw the light.
Ah, so.
You understand what I'm saying? He, quote, becomes the channel. And that's why he said, I introduced you, Almighty Father, to them, and they didn't know you even existed. That's what he said. Wow. Now we have a vision of the Father, which is light. Father of lights.
Okay.
Okay? It's just kind of important how it was done. How at the very beginning, God didn't tell us exactly what happened, and does it really matter? Because we're human, and that's not the issue with human beings.
Right. As long as I just thought the theology was that you were teaching maybe that Lucifer was also, you know, God or something.
No,
like that.
I never said Lucifer was God. I said he was created.
Okay.
Created. God didn't create himself and then created himself and then created. No, God's God.